Across east of England, people are running into the wall Jodie is about to describe. Jodie is fictional. The wall is not. This is their story. In northwest Essex, transport engineers watch rural communities become increasingly isolated while the skills to reconnect them sit unused in training centres and engineering firms across the region. What follows is the story of one engineer who discovered that the only thing standing between viable routes and working people was a treasury that confused issuing currency with spending it.
I became an engineer because I wanted to fix things that were broken. Growing up in Saffron Walden, I watched my dad come home from the railway depot every evening with stories about the trains that used to run through our villages, connecting market towns that are now cut off from each other. When the depot closed in 2003, it felt like something vital had been severed. I was 13 then, old enough to understand that places could just be abandoned. That's what drew me to civil engineering at Anglia Ruskin. My dissertation was on rural bus networks, but what I really wanted to understand was how to bring back the connections we had lost. I got a job at Essex County Council in 2014, straight out of university, working on road maintenance projects. Small stuff, mostly, fixing potholes, upgrading roundabouts. But I kept pushing for investment in rural transport links. Every time I raised it in meetings, I was told the same thing. The Department for Transport had explained that funding for non-metropolitan transport infrastructure was limited due to budget constraints. It sounded reasonable. London needed the Crossrail project. The big cities needed their tram systems. Rural Essex would have to wait. I applied for Network Rail's graduate scheme three times between 2015 and 2017. Each rejection letter said the same thing. Reduced capital expenditure programs meant they were taking fewer graduates that year. Again, it made sense. If there was less money available for building railways, of course there would be fewer jobs for railway engineers. I accepted it and kept working on road projects, telling myself I was still contributing to transport infrastructure, just on a smaller scale. But I couldn't stop thinking about the old railway lines. I walk my Greyhound Pip along them most evenings. The Braintree to Bishop Stortford route that used to run right through our area. The cutting is still there, overgrown but intact. The bridges are still standing. You can trace the entire route on foot if you know where to look. In 2018, I approached the East of England Development Corporation with a proposal to study reviving that link. I had done the preliminary engineering work in my own time. The gradients were workable, the route was clear. The connections to existing infrastructure were straightforward. The response was swift and final. Treasury spending rules meant they could not justify investment in low-density corridors. The cost per passenger mile would be too high compared to projects in urban areas. The business case would not meet the required return on investment thresholds. There is no funding for rural rail restoration projects, the project manager told me over the phone. The budget has been cut year on year. We have to focus resources where they will have maximum impact. For 2 years, I accepted that explanation. It sounded like prudent financial management. Of course, public money had to be spent wisely. Of course, urban projects served more people. Of course, there were limits to what the government could afford. But then I started noticing things that didn't fit. I was driving through Brentwood in 2020. Visiting a friend when I saw a group of construction workers outside the job centre. One of them, Ross, had worked on railway projects before the infrastructure spending was cut. He and his mates were skilled in exactly the kind of work that would be needed to restore rural rail links. They were unemployed not by choice, but because the projects they were trained for had been cancelled. That same week, I visited Colchester Institute to give a talk to civil engineering students. The lecturer mentioned, almost in passing, that their rail engineering course had been running half empty for 2 years. Companies kept telling them there was no demand for rail engineers, so young people were choosing other specialisations. But the course existed. The equipment was there. The instructors were there. The only thing missing were the projects that would create jobs for the graduates. I started to see it everywhere. The old railway cutting, intact and waiting. Unemployed construction workers who knew how to lay track and install signals. A college running rail engineering courses with empty seats. Materials suppliers who could provide everything needed, steel, concrete, electrical systems. All the pieces were there, sitting separately, unable to connect. The question that had been nagging at me finally formed into words. If the people existed, and the skills existed, and the materials existed, and the route existed, what exactly was it that there was no money for? The government that issues the pound sterling was telling me it could not find enough pounds to pay British workers to move British materials along a British railway line to connect British communities. But it could find pounds for other things. It could find pounds to bail out banks. It could find pounds to cut corporation tax. It could find pounds to spend on projects in London. I began to understand that there is no funding was not a statement of fact. It was a statement of priority. The government that prints the money had chosen not to print it for this purpose. The Treasury that manages public spending had chosen to manage it away from rural transport. The Department for Transport that allocates infrastructure investment had chosen to allocate it elsewhere. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places where people like Ross were waiting for work, where colleges were waiting for students, where communities were waiting for connections. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were, all of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still here, still working on transport infrastructure, still walking Pip along those overgrown railway lines. But I understand now that this is not just my story, or Ross's story, or the story of rural Essex. It is the story of every constituency where people and skills and needs exist side by side while someone in Westminster looks at the books and says the cupboard is bare.
What Jody experienced has a name, logical fallacy. A false analogy is when someone compares two fundamentally different things as though they work the same way. If I said goldfish are just like whales because both live in water, you'd spot the error immediately. The size, behaviour and habitat of goldfish and whales are completely different, despite the shared element of water. Yet every time someone told Jody, there is no money, they were making exactly this kind of false comparison. They applied household budget logic to a currency-issuing government. When a household says it cannot afford something, that statement has real meaning. The household must acquire pounds before it spends them. But the UK government issues pounds. It does not need to find them before spending them, any more than a scorekeeper needs to find points before awarding them. The engineers existed, the construction workers existed, the materials existed, the railway cutting existed. What prevented these resources from connecting was not a shortage of pounds, but a treasury doctrine that treated pounds as though they were gold coins in a medieval treasury, finite and precious. The resources existed, the people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Northwest Essex ranks 455 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, placing it in deprivation decile 9. The constituency has 4,171 registered charities according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Total grants received amount to £42.3 million, according to 360 Giving Grant NAV. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.